Welcome to the first episode of Rammer Slammer, pro wrestling talk in the Deep South. I'm Ben Flanagan, and with episode one, I want to answer a question that has tortured me for years. Why do grown men watch professional wrestling? Throughout this podcast, we'll talk to fellow fans and hopefully some actual professional wrestlers and others working in the business. And we hope to get to know wrestling's place in Alabama. Today, we just want to introduce ourselves and talk about why we love watching wrestling. Later, I'll talk to some friends about how they started watching, who they liked as kids, and what they like about the business today. But I want to start with my brother, Graham Flanagan, who works for Business Insider up in New York. We grew up watching the WWF together, Graham even seeing a house show or two very early on before we mainly just rented pay-per-view tapes from local video stores. So, Graham, like I do later on in the show with our friends Ben Stark and Will Nevin, I want to start with why you got into wrestling so young. I mean, it's obvious that wrestling has a pretty universal appeal to children in that it's primarily aimed at them, and we'll get to why it might appeal to grown folks later on in our conversation, but I do want to ask you, what about wrestling early on do you remember drawing you in so fervently?
Hulk Hogan.
What about Hulk Hogan? I get just saying Hulk Hogan kind of says it all, and pretty much every kid who watched wrestling or even didn't watch wrestling loved Hulk Hogan, but why do you think Hulk Hogan did it for you back then?
Well, you know, it's his character, what he represented. He was the good guy. We grew up consuming narratives about good versus evil, from the Bible to G.I. Joe to Batman and all the superheroes, and Hulk Hogan was good in live action on TV every week, and he was a real-life superhero. He wasn't animated, and he wasn't in what we knew was film. He was really real, you know, and I'm talking about when I was a five-year-old kid. So he represented that good versus evil. Again, we were very young when all this was happening, and it had an impact on me. He immediately struck me as a hero, and that's all thanks to the crafting of his character and how he fit into the storyline that Vince McMahon had created.
Yeah, and so like I said, you saw at least one house show, maybe two, in Alabama growing up, way before I, you know, was old enough to even know what wrestling was, and I believe you saw Hulk Hogan in person, right?
Yeah, I think I was like 6 years old. This must have been like 88 or 89. I believe this was after WrestleMania 5. It was between WrestleMania 5 and WrestleMania 6. And it was a house show at the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center, now the Legacy Arena, and where Hogan had the championship. He won in a count out or something. It was like a false finish. So, yeah, that match, which was Hogan versus Macho Man, which was just an amazing card, was lost by like a count out or a false finish or something. So nothing really huge happened that night, but that was an amazing experience to have in Birmingham at the Jefferson Civic Center.
Yeah, and, you know, my first house show was either WWF or WCW. I got into WCW way after you and I really grew up on what you're talking about there, the glory days of Hulk Hogan and Macho Man and the Ultimate Warrior and just this insane roster that Vince McMahon put together back in the late 80s and early 90s. And I just always got transfixed in the video store in that section, just seeing this wall full of wrestling videotapes that I could choose from, whether, you know, it was the WrestleManias or the other pay-per-views or just like best of Hulk Hogan or this wrestler and what have you. And, you know, WCW and any other company, I didn't even know those existed. So I had a lot to learn at that point, and I just love to watch it. I think for me, I mean, for the reasons that you said, but also I totally bought into the storyline and was invested and thought it was real and couldn't believe that these modern day heroes and villains, real life heroes and villains, would settle the score inside a squared circle, which was really just visually appealing to me. The characters all worked really well, and those guys were just excellent performers, and it was just fun to watch them fight, and it still is, to be honest with you. But you know, before we get there, you know, you mentioned Hulk Hogan and a couple of others. I'm just curious, perhaps other than Hulk Hogan, who else did you really like specifically? Who were your guys growing up?
You mean early on?
Yeah, when you were younger.
Well, certainly, I was, as a young kid, who thought that what I was watching was real, you sort of tend to go with the baby faces or the good guys, as it were. And I think, you know, obviously the Ultimate Warrior, just all the WWF guys at that time, Big Boss Man was a baby face at that time, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, the Bushwhackers, Demolition, you know, I mean, just I was a mark for baby faces. You know, I was like 5 and 6 years old, you know, and then I when you're brought up at that age, good is good, and so you root for good over evil.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, the Ultimate Warrior was probably the first hero and good guy that really stuck out to me. I thought he was really unique. In fact, I preferred him at the time to Hulk Hogan, even. I think that was probably true for a lot of kids my age. At the time, there was not much complicated about the character and about his performance and delivery. You know, when he got on the mic, maybe a little more complicated in retrospect, and that he made no sense, but it was all just big and loud and fun, and that's what worked for me. Also, you know, one of my favorites growing up and as I evolved sort of as a fan was Bret Hart. I was a big Bret Hart fan, even when he was in the Hart Foundation with Jim Neidhart. I thought they were a ton of fun. I thought he had a great look. The glasses were really cool. And you know, sort of as I grew up and as he became bigger and part of the main storyline and eventually the champion, you know, things like, you know, one of the quintessential pay-per-views for me, and I know that people might not look back at this as one of the greatest of all time, you know, with the countless other pay-per-views that exist out there and that we can choose from watching the WWE Network or something, was SummerSlam 94. Because, you know, we rarely ever ordered the pay-per-views. You know, we would have to rent them in video stores. And we started to at a certain point in the mid-90s, but it was probably after God wanted us to watch a pay-per-view that wasn't through the lines like we used to back in the day. And one night, it just, you know, a lightning bolt struck the top of our house, and SummerSlam 94 came in clear. And I watched the whole thing, and then I taped it when it aired back-to-back, and I had it on a VHS tape, and I just watched it nonstop. And it was a double main event with Bret Hart versus Owen Hart in the steel cage, and then, you know, fake Undertaker versus the real Undertaker coming back from the dead with Paul Bearer or whatever. And I just loved the fact that I had that free access to a pay-per-view. But the show itself was just so much fun. And it just really ingrained itself in me and made me sort of a wrestling fan for life. And again, you know, as we evolve, we sort of follow the storylines as they do too. And these new characters that emerge as the industry changes, like obviously we got pretty latched on to the Attitude Era, especially as it dawned on fans. So Stone Cold and The Rock, we were obviously big fans of. But I mean, anything from that era or any pay-per-view specifically that stick out for you as pivotal moments in your fandom?
Well, I remember seeing the first Survivor Series, and I want to go back a little bit before we get to the Attitude Era, just because we're talking about what made us fall in love with this,
yeah,
this art form, you know. And you know, you go back to Hulk Hogan, and I mean, for me, Hulk Hogan as a young child fit in the same, you know, in the same league as Optimus Prime, and you know, all, you know, like Hulk Hogan was in the same league as those guys. You know, he was just like this real life action figure that represented the hero that you latched onto and felt like, okay, when you heard his music, you knew that justice was going to be served. It was very rarely that somebody go over on Hulk Hogan, unless it was like, you know, Tugboat coming in and cheating and beating him, you know, or Earthquake, you know, cheating to beat Hulk Hogan. You knew if it was fair and square, Hulk Hogan was going to win. And those values, something that, you know, I, as a little kid, you know, I embraced, and I felt like, you know, this is what a good person is, someone that fights for the right thing. And so I latched onto that. And So in terms of pay-per-views, WrestleMania 5, the original, when the Mega Powers called, that's like the earliest pay-per-view that I can actually remember comprehending. We did not watch it live. We certainly had to wait until like the summer when it came out on VHS to watch it. And it was amazing, and you go back and watch it, it's still amazing. But in terms of, you know, getting past that era, you know, you mentioned Bret Hart. You referenced WCW. And as a kid, a little kid, I remember at school and summer camp and stuff, people would talk about people like Sting and Ric Flair. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Who the hell are these freaking people you're talking about? You know, they're not on WWF. You know, who the hell is Sting? You know, then you go to the grocery store and see the magazine there, and you'd see these, like, magazines that weren't affiliated with WWF. You'd see Ric Flair covered with blood and Sting covered with blood. And I'm like, where are these people watching this? So I don't know if you remember this. And you know, I'm a huge fan now of Ric Flair and Sting. But back in the day, back in the late 80s, early 90s, I had no understanding of who these people were. I don't understand still to this. How did people in Tuscaloosa, Alabama have access to watch Sting and Ric Flair on television? Was it TNN?
Yeah, I hated them, you know, because they were different and they were outsiders, because I was just so stuck to WWF and they felt like threats to what I was used to. And so for years, I just, you know, I had sort of like a personal distaste and feud for the WCW guys. And it was weird because I kind of went through a transition period where I embraced WCW, and it wasn't so much the Sting and Ric Flair stuff as a lot of WWF guys left. They jumped ship, and including Hulk Hogan and Hacksaw Jim Duggan and a handful, and Macho Man and a handful of these guys who left, and it sort of changed things, you know, forever. And so I kind of had to watch because those heroes went from one place to the other. And yeah, I ended up going to a house show, and obviously WCW evolved on its own, you know, in with the Monday Night Wars and things of that nature, just in ways it had to compete. And it was really exciting just to see that level of competition and that many different wrestlers and personalities and things. And it was pretty fun to go back and forth to see who was better, judging each of the companies for what they were putting out there. And I've forever been a WWF, and I'll stick with that for a while. I've been loyal to that for a while, you know, just because, again, I grew up with it, and I just thought that, you know, looking back, the product was just a little bit better and a little more fun for me as a viewer growing up. And again, going back to those personalities like the Ultimate Warrior and Bret Hart and Hulk Hogan and Macho Man, obviously when they were in the WWF, it was just a blast. But once those Monday Night Wars kicked in, everything kind of changed.
Yeah, and, you know, like, again, I feel like we were uneducated about WCW, or as it was known then, NWA. That was big enough. It had its own, like, Nintendo game. It was legit. And, you know, just for whatever reason, in our household, we were not aware of it. And kudos to our parents. They were probably like, look, one territory is enough for our household. We don't need, you know, they've got McMahon, that we don't need to bring in like Crockett and God knows where, and, you know, all these other territories into the household, and that's fine. But I, you know, look, I did not acknowledge WCW as real until, like you just said, WWF stars started to migrate there. But I really feel like now, you know, what we know today is professional wrestling. It wouldn't be possible without the sort of merger of those two territories, those two companies. And those two companies, that being said, and I had a great time getting to know WCW, you know, in the mid to late 90s. But, man, when ECW came on the scene, that made me an even bigger fan of professional wrestling. That showed me an even – just a side of it that I never could have imagined, you know, that was almost this, like, R-rated side. That means just as much to me as anything I experienced, you know, growing up with WWF and my experience in WCW. ECW just elevated everything, and it allowed me to enjoy it as I grew up.
Yeah, it was weird because you got into ECW before I did, and I followed shortly after for sure once I saw, you know, 5 minutes of what they were doing. Because I mean, it was like, I don't know, it's just like it's like coming of age wrestling, right? Where you go through the rite of passage of finally watching ECW, and it sort of makes a man out of you in terms of being a young wrestling fan, in that there was, you know, these extreme and hardcore matches, and like you said, there was sort of an R-rated mentality and attitude about it, something that obviously influenced and helped usher in the Attitude Era in WWE. But yeah, I mean, when you and I and a handful of your friends and our dad even, we went to, you know, our dad, not a fan, but a guardian at these events, and somebody who had to go with us and make sure, you know, we were safe. He, you know, sat up in the stands while we had a blast. We went to an ECW show at Boutwell Auditorium in Birmingham, and I know that your memory of it is probably going to be a little clearer than mine, but, you know, the main thing I remember is that it was one of the greatest nights of my life.
Yeah, I remember saying that night, when the house lights went up and the show was officially over, I, like, turned around to everyone and said, that's the greatest live entertainment experience I've ever had.
Yeah, well, I mean, looking back, I mean, it probably still holds up. I mean, I go back and watch ECW videos and think, yeah, it was as awesome as we thought it was. It was just intense. The energy was just off the charts and like nothing we'd ever seen, even in WWF or ECW or in WCW. That stuff kind of felt like child's play in a way, something that we still loved. But this ECW stuff that was going on and these people that were involved, it was just something that, it was just an untapped resource for us that felt just like a raw nerve of professional wrestling and just breaking all sorts of rules, letting fans be such a huge part of it. And I go back and I watch some of the stuff. I recently watched the documentary Beyond the Mat, which is fantastic. And it gives you a small glimpse into ECW and what Paul Heyman was doing back in the day and some of those wrestlers. And it's amazing to me how much ECW has really influenced what you see today in the crowds and the chanting and just the crowd behavior and the interaction. That's, to me, all ECW. I mean, in retrospect, especially in comparison, the crowds of WWF were just so much tamer and cleaner and, you know, just much stiffer, you know. And with ECW, that's just where you could let loose and just get down and dirty and have a blast and not know what was going to happen next.
Well, because, again, I started this conversation by saying the first thing that brought me into professional wrestling was Hulk Hogan, the ultimate babyface, right? And then with ECW, that made me embrace the heel, the bad guy, and enjoy that. And I think that shows that every man, every human being has a devil and an angel on his shoulder. We have both sides. And real professional wrestling fans, you know, smart marks, as it were, the ones who have, like, grown up loving it and enjoying it and embracing it, they love both sides of it. They love the heel. I love the heel to this day. I love seeing justice done. I love seeing good conquering evil. But I also enjoy the heel. You know, I enjoy seeing the bad guy do his thing and cheating and you know, and being the bad guy, being the heel. And that's the beauty of it, the dichotomy of it. And so I think ECW brought that out in me. It made me enjoy that side of the business. And so up to that point, I was always like, oh, the baby face is who we should cheer for and who we should embrace. But then when you get to ECW, you're like, no, actually, the heel's pretty fun too. And that formed my sort of fandom and fanhood as a professional wrestling fan.
Yeah, and it helps you sort of look back on the stuff that we did watch and when we didn't appreciate what the bad guys were doing and how they fit into the narrative. And we just kind of looked at them as the obstacle for heroes like Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior. But now I can look back and I laugh the hardest at Rick Martel and Bobby Heenan and Million Dollar Man and these other bad guys who are incredible performers and they're who I enjoy watching most now. And obviously, again, the influence that ECW had on you as a viewer in terms of embracing the bad guy and embracing that edge. Again, the influence trickled into WWE and the Attitude Era, in that Stone Cold was sort of an anti-hero, right? And he was a guy who started bad, but the fans just loved him so much that he kind of evolved into this fan favorite that was sort of a good guy just because he was the bad boy rebel who was anti-establishment and stuck it to his boss in a way that people could really identify with. And that just became such a huge part of our household and many others, certainly when Stone Cold sort of reshaped the business.
Yeah, and where had Stone Cold cut his teeth right before he came to the WWF? ECW. That's where he came from. That's where he got, as he says, got his chops cutting promos and on the mic and forming his character. So ECW, that whole brand has sort of infected the WWE in such a great way, I think, especially for people like, you know, who are more of our generation that have enabled us to keep up with it, because we can see it from both sides, babyface and heel. And the example of Stone Cold, that's where he came from. He came to WWF with those sort of values affecting his character that he brought and developed in WWF. And look what happened. It changed everything. And WWF and what became WWE in the Stone Cold era was completely different from what we saw in the Hulk Hogan era in WrestleMania 5 and the ones that preceded it.
Well, Graham, and before we go in depth anymore, I just want to talk about today and where we've sort of arrived as fans. And, you know, I actually stopped watching wrestling a long time ago, and it was right as the Attitude Era was really kicking into high gear. And I stopped until about the tail, or I guess the aftermath of WrestleMania 30. So there is a huge chunk of the industry that I'm just flat out missed. I mean, there were bits and pieces I would pick up every so often if I was flipping and I stopped on USA or whatever. But honestly, your sort of renewed enthusiasm for it over recent years and mutual friends of ours who shared that got me back in it, and here I am just sort of like steeped in this culture and watching it, you know, multiple times a week and doing deep dives in the WWE network. Who are some people today that you really like? Men, women, whatever. What about the industry today are you a big fan of specifically, I guess, as it relates to WWE or whatever other company you happen to be watching?
I love Brock Lesnar. His whole run that he's had in the last couple of years, especially with, you know, that match with John Cena, SummerSlam, I think 2014, where he delivered pink suplexes, that was amazing, and very different for WWE. And just to like let a heel just dominate a babyface, just purely with physical dominance. That was amazing. It's different. I love when The Rock comes back still. Anytime he comes back to promote a movie, The Rock, you know, I still think he obviously has the same presence that he had during the Attitude Era. I loved The Shield and what that did for the WWE and how they built them up as this force and then broke them up. It was great, and it was inevitable, and I love it. And I think that all three of those guys stand alone on their own, and they're all great, and look forward to see what happens with all of them. The Daniel Bryan, I think that was fantastic. You know, that was the ultimate babyface, the underdog, the David, you know, versus the Elias. I thought that was just perfectly booked. And it's a shame that the fact that he has to retire now because of injuries. But there's so much about the current product that I love, and I love NXT, and I love a bunch of their stars, and can't wait for Enzo Amore to make his WWE debut. I think he's going to be huge. I don't know yet if he's going to have that main event potential, but he's going to be great for the business and great for TV. And in terms of the Divas division, I love the Bella Twins. They've been able to work heel and babyface interchangeably. You know, I wish in terms of Charlotte, I wish Ric Flair would work the mic a little more. He's just become sort of a silent manager, and I don't even see the point of being there other than to remind people that Charlotte's his daughter. But in terms of Divas, I love Paige. I think she's great on my great worker and great look. So I think they have a lot of things going for them right now. And I still love the authority angle. So I like the product a lot. I think that the Rusev gimmick has sort of diminished a little bit, and that's unfortunate because they had a really good thing going, but we'll see where that goes. He's still a very talented, big, scary guy. But again, this is the whole point. Is like they've got me excited about the product. There's a lot of things going on in the product that interests me. Does it maintain my attention for 3 hours every Monday night? No, absolutely not. And that's a problem. But I think the potential is there, and I will definitely be tuning into WrestleMania. I think this is a huge WrestleMania. The fact that it's in Cowboy Stadium, so much is on the line. I'm very excited to see where it goes, and it's pivotal. I think that if they need to deliver here to make sure that they have an audience that's, you know, committed and it will be there for the rest of the year and for years to come.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I'm going to disagree with you about Ric Flair with Charlotte. Honestly, this is the most I've ever liked Ric Flair is in this role. Because I love smarmy managers, and I just think he plays the role really well, especially ones who meddle with matches, and I think he's been great, and I think it works. I think just the dynamic of him doing that in the Divas division, the women's division in WWE is really funny. It's just a really funny image that I think they capitalize on a good bit. And Graham, you know, you're tossing these terms out left and right, like babyface and heel and blah, 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 and you have become so enamored with the language of the industry, and you've done a great piece for businessinsider.com where you talk about all of these different, all of this terminology in the wrestling world that a lot of outsiders and even casual fans are totally unfamiliar with, like again, babyface and heel and over and these different things that in kayfabe, these things that mean very specific things in the wrestling world and are used so often. And I think that it's really sort of changed the way that you not only view the industry, but the way you have, you know, grown to love it. And, you know, the big question that I want to ask here, you and the other guys, is why do you think grown men and grown people generally love wrestling? And now that you're an adult and somebody who has learned to love it in different ways, you know, the interest, you know, among kids is clear and obvious because, I mean, it's their primary audience. But they understand that adults love it too, and they try to gear a lot of their content towards them, and it's obviously working on people like us. So why do you think in your early 30s you still love pro wrestling and continue to watch?
Well, because I love theater. You know, I love storytelling, and like I'm right now, I just turned on WWE Network just to have it on in the background to kind of like have it going, have the product going. And I've turned on this clip where Steve Austin's in the ring and all these cops come in the ring and they're all about to beat him with billy clubs. And Vince McMahon is the commentator and he gets up to calm everything down. And you're just like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And it's theater. It's like, I can imagine being in a theater and seeing the same thing happen. And the fact that Vince McMahon has been able to create this illusion that it's real creates a sense of urgency and, you know, it scares people. It's an amazing type of art. It really is. And I know it's theater. I know it's fake, but I love theater. I you know, people go to the theater and they you know, they'll pay $150 to see Al Pacino and they know it's fake, but yet they want to surrender to the storytelling, which goes back thousands and thousands of years, the desire to see a story being told, you know, and it goes back that far. And that's what they do every week. You have to give it to them. Sometimes it's better than others, but it's that storytelling and it's the excitement. And then you incorporate the athleticism and the explicitness and the violence and the sexiness with the women. It just all comes together and combines to be theater, which we love. And we have loved for thousands of years as human beings, going all the way back to biblical times. So I think it's just a primal thing that we need. We need to see stories. We need to see things acted out, even though we know they're go to movies. You know, I go to see the movie Brooklyn. I know that's not real. It's not a true story. But I still get into it. I still embrace it and love it. And I think that's what it is. And that's what, you know, people, it's so funny to me how people dismiss and criticize professional wrestling, you know, and call it trashy. It's sick. I don't understand that. It's like, it's just, it really says more about those people than it does about professional wrestling. And I don't know what it is. It's some sort of insecurity, some sort of lower common denominator of people and society in the country. And that's really sad. It's really just storytelling. It's told with a lot of resources going into it in terms of budget and in terms of theatricality. And I think people just need to step back, take a look at it, and realize that it is, along with Broadway, along with movies, it is storytelling. And that's what appeals to me on a base level. And I will never apologize for it. But look, it's not always great. Sometimes it's Coco Beware versus Isaac Yankem DDS. But look, it comes back every week. You're going to have a new chance. So give it a chance. And maybe you'll find something that resonates with you.
That's well said. We're going to get into this and a whole lot more, hopefully, as we move forward. But I'm going to move on to Will and Ben now. But thanks so much for being a part of this first episode.
Thank you.
Now I want to welcome on this here pilot episode of Rammer Slammer, one of my favorites, an AL.com contributor. You might have read his weekly comic column, Wednesday Warriors, Will Nevin. How's it going, man?
Not too bad. Thanks for the plug.
Of course, man. I love it. But I also loved your recent recap of Monday Night Raw. You were able to go to Birmingham and you saw the Brock Lesnar bookended episode there. You even sported a Suplex City Birmingham specific shirt. Pretty awesome. I hate to have missed it. I hate to say that I had better things to do, but it just so happened that I did, even though, you know, Brock Lesnar was in town. So how was that, first of all?
I talked about it in the review how Raw is a marathon of an endurance. You know,
yeah.
It's 3 hours long, and that's just a televised presentation. I mean, when you walk in the building, you know, you have, I think it's like superstars or main event before the actual taping, and then there are commercial breaks, and it's just kind of a slog. But for the moments that the camera was on and Brock Lesnar was in the building, I mean, there was a real electricity, and it was a great event. And, yeah, you better believe I bought the Suplex City Birmingham in Alabama colors T-shirt. That's something that a friend and I picked up on, I think it was last week when they were in Seattle. And it's like, oh, the Seattle shirts are blue and green. Oh, the shirts we bought were red and white. So, you know, sorry, Auburn.
Hey, it's no big deal. I'm sure they understand. And I'm guessing some Auburn fans bought some Suplex City Birmingham shirts in the red. So, yeah, that was awesome. I encourage people to read your recap. It's really cool. And I agree with you. I've been to one Raw. It was in April 2014, I believe. And you're right, man. It really is. It's a marathon for sure. But it's a total blast, like you said, when the cameras are on. And I'd do it again 100 times if I could. So
that was the Evolution reunion show, wasn't it?
That is absolutely correct. Yeah,
I was there for that one.
Right on. Yeah, it was some of the final days of the Shield there too. So I was glad to see the Shield in action. So always fun. Maybe we'll get a reunion with the Shield too. Perhaps not Evolution. I could do without that. But the reason we're here, Nevin, is you're a wrestling fan, obviously, or else you wouldn't be on here, a wrestling podcast. And you know, I want to talk to each of you who I hope to be recurring guests here on the show and proud members of Rammer Slammer, the new club. I want to talk to you about your sort of background as a wrestling fan and why you got into it. I know it takes an insane person to do that, but we do it with a lot of pride here, perhaps not for others. But tell me a little bit about, you know, where you're from and when you first got into it and some of the guys you really liked growing up.
Well, I'm a local boy, originally from Moundville. I've gone real far in life. Right now I'm in Livingston in my office at West Alabama. I can remember the precise moment that I get interested in professional wrestling. And I don't know if other people have a story like this, but I feel like this is a little bit different. I had a friend growing up in Moundville that was like crazy into wrestling, like right at the height of the Austin McMahon feud, and he was like so into it, had the Austin 316 shirt, and I would play the wrestling video games, like, you know, WWF Attitude or whatever for PlayStation. It was like, I wasn't quite into the program. Like, I had never tuned into Raw or anything like that. And then one night, our cable system got screwed up, and the pay-per-view was free. And I was just flipping through channels, and it was a first blood match between Steve Austin and the Undertaker. And I watched that match, and I was like, hey, this is pretty interesting. And I remember tuning in the next night to Raw, and I have been watching more or less ever since, with some occasional breaks along the way. Sometimes I just kind of get disinterested or depressed and move on to other things, but inevitably I come back.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. I took a long break, sort of, as the Attitude Era was really kicking in. I had been a fan for a long time, ever since the early 90s, the Wii one. And then I took a break. Really, honestly, it lasted about until the aftermath of WrestleMania 30. So I missed a lot, but thanks to the network, I've been able to sort of go back and catch up on big moments here and there, just to sort of get some context to, you know, for what went on and why people are as big as they are now. But, you know, that's interesting you bring up the free pay-per-view thing. That happened to me one time, too. It was for SummerSlam 94, which featured, obviously, it was a two-part main event, and the first one was one of my favorite matches ever, and it was the steel cage match between Owen Hart and Bret Hart for the championship, and that was followed by the Undertaker's return against the fake Undertaker in a casket match. Yeah, so that was a big one for me too. So yeah, I mean, the gods are shining down upon you when that happens, when you don't have to watch it through the lines
that
you sort of had to back in the day, and it just kicks in and you can watch all 3 hours of pay-per-view glory for free. So that's interesting. So I'm reminded of a time, because you and I actually worked together at the Crimson White at the University of Alabama many moons ago, and I remember, you know, occasionally even the college kids would get some promotional items sent via mail in the entertainment cubby hole. And I remember once I got a Shawn Michaels Best of Shawn Michaels DVD, and I don't know if you remember this, but I seem to recall you being kind of a Shawn Michaels guy, just in terms of you were a fan of his work. And I ended up giving that DVD to you because I knew that. Is that true? Are you still a Shawn Michaels guy, or who else did you like growing up?
Well, you know, seeing as I came in, like, pretty much the tail end of the Attitude Era, the end of Austin McMahon, I missed the first sort of half of Shawn Michaels' career. You know, you got the first half, you know, when he was with DX and Bret Hart and, like, the beginning of his career, and then he took that time off for injuries. And then he came back. He came back as this grizzled legend. And in those years that I had watched, those first couple of years, you know, it always seemed like people just talked about Shawn Michaels in this kind of, like, reverent tone. Like, oh, yeah, you know, he's like the former commissioner that's not around anymore. Or, you know, he was this amazing, you know, wrestler, and, he, you know, he can't do it anymore. And then he comes back, and has this match against Triple H at whatever SummerSlam that was, this brutal, like, street fight, and Shawn Michaels just basically wrestled as an old man in jeans the entire time. And I guess at that point he was trying to figure out if he could come back full time, and he did, and he had a great run, like a great coda to his career. And I'd be hard pressed to name, like, say, my top five matches, but in that top five, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair's retirement match at WrestleMania. If that match does not bring a tear to your eye, like the finish at that match with Ric Flair crying in the ring and Michaels kicking him, and it was just, oh, it was poetry. You know, two guys that physically couldn't do the same things that they were able to do at one point, but they were such good storytellers, and it was so good. But yeah, Michaels is one of my guys. My other guy that I would point to, as being from a kind of that same era, right around the 2000s, Kurt Angle. Oh, what a talented wrestler he was. I like guys who are, you know, basically perfect wrestlers, in that they can perform in the ring, and they can back it up on the mic. And Kurt Angle could cut any kind of promo you needed from him, whether it was funny or dead serious, and then he could back it up in the ring too. He's so good. And that's another kind of career we look back on and think, well, you know, what would have happened? Well, what would have happened if he could have been healthy, if he didn't have the substance abuse problems that kind of led to his being dismissed from WWE and then, you know, being in the wilderness in TNA for like the last 10 years. But man, I love Kurt Angle.
Man, that's interesting. And I need to go back and watch as much Kurt Angle as I can, because all I hear is how great he was. And he was obviously part of that interval where I totally missed out on his entire WWE run. And I've gone back and watched the occasional YouTube video and seen, you know, his entrances where the fans are chanting "You suck" to his music, and his response and performance is just really hilarious. And I don't think you ever would have expected a guy of his athletic caliber to be as funny as he was. And so, yeah, I'm definitely going to revisit Kurt Angle. So that's interesting. And, you know, I'm curious, before I ask my last question, what about right now? Who's the guy right now, or guy or woman who is sort of doing it for you in terms of that sort of performance and that sort of mic work? Is there a total package performer right now that you're a big fan of?
Well, you know, it's a really impossible standard to say that I like wrestlers. And by the way, I will use the term wrestler. I hate this WWE, you know, future speak of, oh, superstars and entertainers. And the WWE universe, it's a thing that McMahon does that bugs me the most. They are wrestlers. The female performers are not divas. They are female wrestlers. So, but that's going to be my personal rule going forward here. But no, it's an impossible standard to say that, yeah, I expect you to be at the top notch of your profession in the ring and on the mic. But I am a greedy man. Today, you got to look at people like Kevin Owens, and I realize that is such an obvious answer to say for a wrestling nut, but Kevin Owens is so, so good. His body type, you don't look at him and think, oh, he's athletic. You know, he's built like an offensive lineman, pretty much. He could probably start at like D2 offensive line. You know, he's kind of thicker and not like muscular thick. But he is such a good guy at getting boos and getting just hated. But then he can also, you know, he can also run around the ring and just do these incredible power moves that you just wouldn't think would be from that kind of guy. And he is deliciously evil and sometimes basically sadistic. And I love that as from a heel performer. Kevin Owens is good. I like him. On the face side, I guess I have a begrudging acceptance for John Cena at this point. You know, so many years he gets pushed down your throats and pushed down your throats, but I thought his work with the US Open Challenge for 2015 was a really nice stretch. He did some great things both in the ring and working with a variety of opponents, and I thought it was a real highlight. I will say I am definitively anti-Roman Reigns. I will tell you that. I'm going to go hard in on Roman Reigns as both lacking on both sides of the ledger, as not being a great in-ring performer and cutting terrible, boring, uninteresting promos.
Yeah, well, you know, he might have a long way to go, but maybe you'll come around on him like you seem to have on Cena.
I can't see the future, certainly, but he's going to have to come a long way.
Well,
I'll say that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that he's got a lot of good qualities, but, you know, right now it's just perhaps not the time, and he needs a little more work, for sure. I think most fans probably think that. So the last thing I want to leave here with, Will, is just why? Because I mean, you're a bright guy. You're a guy with many college degrees. You teach. you've got a lot of, you know, notches on your belt academically and personally, professionally. So why does a guy like you love professional wrestling today? Not when you were a kid, but now. Perhaps it was because you did when you were a kid, but why do you think it stuck with you this long?
Because when all the stars align, when you get the right people, the right wrestlers, supported by the right creative direction, you can get some amazing stories. And you can get stories that you just don't really get in other genres, I think. Going back to that WrestleMania match with Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels, you knew the histories of these guys. You knew that they were both, you know, at the tail end of their careers, and it can be so real and so magical. And it's this strange intertwining of storylines and real life, and it just sometimes it just works, and it's hard to express it any other way than it just works. Going back to Kevin Owens and strangely enough John Cena, they had a series of matches last year. I think a lot of people would disagree how the feud eventually played out, but after their first match, Kevin Owens the next night on Raw comes out and cuts this amazing promo. And it really wasn't in line with kind of his heel character, but you know what? It was just beautiful because you could see the emotion. This was a guy that had worked in every, you know, small gym in Canada on the East Coast, and he had finally made his big WWE debut. He beats John Cena, and he comes out the next night and says, "My time is now." And it's so much energy and passion, and you can't, you know, there are just some moments in professional wrestling where you just can't help but stand up and cheer and, you know, hell yeah.
Love it, man. Well, Will Nevin, thanks. Everybody go out and read the comic column, Wednesday Warriors, every Wednesday on AOL.com. Will, thanks again for being a part of this, man.
My pleasure. Look forward to doing it again.
Next up is my good friend Ben Stark, a Huntsville-based filmmaker, a name that you may or may not have read on AL.com. We've covered several of his ventures into the Alabama film world, and Ben happens to be a pretty major fan of pro wrestling. And to be quite honest, Ben, you're kind of an ambassador in terms of pulling me back into this desolate landscape we call loving pro wrestling in our adulthood. And we'll get to why we love it in our adulthood. But first, I kind of want to start with, why did you get into wrestling in the first place, or how anyway? It's pretty easy for kids to get into it. And you have a pretty unique and encyclopedic knowledge of the industry, especially early 30s young man. So I'm curious, just in terms of how you got into this, what drew you to pro wrestling as a child?
Well, first of all, I apologize for being this this ambassador that pulled you into this thing, back into it. Yeah, so when I was a kid, I kind of like peripherally knew about wrestling, and a lot of my friends knew about wrestling. Of course, I was a kid in the late 80s and early 90s at the height of Hulk Hogan and the WWF. I always thought from afar, like looking at the toys and stuff, that Macho Man Randy Savage seemed like the clear best. But my parents were like, this doesn't seem, like a good way for you to spend your time. So I wasn't really allowed to watch it. And then as a teenager, my friends and I started watching it as a joke. We thought, oh, man, this is so goofy. You know, WCW has Goldberg, and it's this guy, and then Hulk Hogan is still around, and he's got this painted-on beard, and it's just this really hilarious thing that we couldn't believe was so popular, and we started watching it ironically. And then lo and behold, we watched it enough to start picking up the storylines, and we started kind of getting interested in, like, okay, there's like an internal logic here. And I realized at that point that pro wrestling is comic books. It's a real life comic book. And I've been, even before I was a movie fan, I was a comic book fan. So pro wrestling really became a comic book come to life. And then of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin became very popular. And as an adolescent, you know, there's kind of nothing cooler than this guy that curses and doesn't care about anybody and does what he wants and, you know, shuns authority and drinks beer. So it was just this kind of like, at that point, it was a very therapeutic thing. And so there, I just kind of followed the rabbit trail. It was, honestly, it's one of those things where comics are expensive. You know, if you spend money every week on comic books, you're spending, you know, upwards of $15, but it was absolutely free to tune into Raw or Nitro every week, and keep up with what was going on. And then of course the internet came along and I started reading about ECW and older wrestling and NWA. And then I got more into the internal logic of what a wrestling match means and what narratively, you know, what narratively makes a good wrestling match or a good wrestling storyline. So I just kind of got into the nitty gritty and the science of it all. And it never really seemed that strange to me, other than the fact that I would never volunteer this information and still don't. You know, I would never really, I'm not going to lead with, hey, my name's Ben, and I not only enjoy watching pro wrestling, I feel like I understand it at a, you know, micro level. That's not something I'm going to share openly, unless I know somebody pretty well.
Well, and to get even sadder, and this could be an episode of the show unto itself, but if pro wrestling is comic books, then did that make somebody like Stone Cold Steve Austin like Wolverine, or which character would you parallel him with?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, you know, that was probably the same appeal as Wolverine, was this kind of like renegade guy that wouldn't follow the rules. But when, you know, as a reaction to the popularity of somebody like that Superman or a Captain America, which is, you know, which would be Hulk Hogan. But,
or
yeah,
would have been,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, so you mentioned Stone Cold, you mentioned Macho Man, just to get sort of a grasp on the directions you sort of leaned as a youngster and as you sort of evolved as a fan. Who were your guys growing up?
I think that my first favorite, like I said, I thought Macho Man, just from a style and like audaciousness standpoint, always stood out to me when I was a kid. I think Ric Flair always seemed cool because he seemed like your dad's friend from a business meeting that just happened to be a wrestler. And then as I got into, as we started watching Nitro as a joke, I thought Scott Hall, post Razor Ramon in the NWO era, was just this such a ridiculous sketch of masculinity that I was like, well, that's just great. Like, this, how does he keep his stubble at that level so consistently? How does he keep his hair so straight and then yet so jerry curled in the back with the single strand down the front? It was just like, it's like, well, yeah, that's just the most iconography, you know, he had the most iconic kind of look of anybody. But of course, that was towards the end of his career and he was a raging alcoholic. And so he wasn't around much. And so I quickly had to pick up on other folks. But I like I said, Goldberg kind of took off and I was like, well, this guy, you almost have to take seriously. I liked him. Stone Cold, The Rock was, I think, it's just this guy with this sarcastic wit. He also kind of made pro wrestling seem kind of cool, you know, and he still does that. He's probably, you know, the world's most normal, you know, most acceptable pro wrestling figure ever. And and anybody that was kind of on top there. And then as I started getting more nerdy about it, I started becoming a fan of the more technical guys, like when Kurt Angle came on the scene. I was a big fan of Taz in ECW. Really, it was once ECW folded, it really became more about, you know, the Kurt Angles. Eddie Guerrero became an all-time favorite there after doing a lot of research. And then, of course, Brock Lesnar came around, and he was, you know, that was a pretty big arrival. And really, right around when he came in and then was pretty unceremoniously left WWE, again, that's kind of also when I left. I started getting into college, and I had many, many better things to do with my time. So I stopped paying attention for almost 10 years.
Before we get into, like, what guys and what women you like today, I'm just curious, were there any, like, specific moments in wrestling time, pay-per-views, that really sort of stick out for you even today or when you were a kid and when you were growing up as a fan? I mean, you know, I can look back on many, especially during the mid-90s, and obviously there were the Monday Night Wars, which I think were a big part of a lot of young people our age, you know, a part of our lives. But what pay-per-views or moments sort of shaped your fandom?
I mean, I think the first huge moment where I was like, well, this is really cool, like seeing this payoff, was seeing Goldberg from his debut to it being announced that he was going to wrestle on free TV for the world championship, Hulk Hogan, the following week. And so we had a bunch of friends over. This is in high school. We had a bunch of friends over and neighbors over, and we had like this party where we just watched Nitro for 3 hours, and Goldberg won the championship, and it was this huge deal, and it was in Atlanta, and the crowd was insane. And it was something that I had kind of paid attention to from the beginning of his kind of undefeated streak storyline. And it was a lot of fun. And we, you know, it was, everybody was over at my house and we were having a party. It was like watching this movie that, you know, culminated with this cool moment. So that was, I think, the first time where I was like, okay, this is how fun this can be. And then going on from there, there's, you know, a handful of moments when Mick Foley won the championship on Raw one time. Oh, I think backing up a little bit, the first huge moment was my friend that was much more into wrestling than me invited us over to his house to watch King of the Ring 98. So that was really the start of everything else. I should have mentioned that earlier. And of course, King of the Ring 1998 is infamous because it featured the Hell in a Cell match between Mankind and The Undertaker, where The Undertaker throws him off the top of the cell. So that was one of the first wrestling matches I ever watched in my entire life. So I think then that's probably another good indicator of why it kind of stood out for me and kept my attention, because that's one of the most, I mean, it's still a clip that everybody plays, you know, and talks about. So that probably was the major one that captured my attention. And then later on, the Goldberg win, and then, you know, billions of Stone Cold Steve Austin moments.
You know, I'm totally with you on the Goldberg thing. That was just such a huge moment for fans. It was just the height of WCW's run there.
Yes.
And it was weird because pins for the championship belt just didn't happen on free TV, right? Like that was just something that just didn't normally happen. And it just felt like such a rush when, A, like you said, they announced that the match was happening. But, you know, as fans, even when we were younger, I think we were kind of onto it and probably suspected that this is going to end in a disqualification. There's no way Goldberg wins this. This will just tease the next pay-per-view or something. But sure enough, he won, and it just instantly became one of the greatest moments in not only WCW but wrestling history. And yeah, I mean, those Nitro crowds, I mean, I don't know how much more fired up live crowds have been than when those Nitro crowds were at their peak.
After 3 hours, you know, they would.
Yeah.
Those shows were 3 hours long. And, I mean, Raw is 3 hours these days, and it seems like the crowd can't even keep its energy for half of that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, the way they programmed that with the luchadors in the early moments and having, you know, this tremendously huge roster. They didn't do very many things well, but they were able to keep those crowds interested.
So what about today? I mean, which man or woman who's currently wrestling? I mean, we're probably going to stick with WWE for the most part here, but I know that your knowledge is a little more expansive in terms of other territories and companies and things of that nature. So, I mean, who right now, who's the guy or woman who really sticks out as sort of the total package that has your attention?
I came back into it because of, I had heard rumblings of CM Punk making waves, and The Rock was coming back. So for a while there, I was paying a lot of attention to CM Punk. And then, of course, that timing got me into the story of Daniel Bryan. But you said people that are wrestling now, so I won't mention him. So in that time, I think it was kind of a perfect time to discover this new wave of guys that were coming in. And I think from that whole crop, Seth Rollins is just, he's fantastic, man. He's great. He can be anything that they want him to be in terms of if they want him to be a Sting level superhero, you know, good guy, or if they want him to be what he's been doing very well, which is this kind of smarmy bad guy. I think he's great. I think he's his moveset is phenomenal, and he's adaptable. I think he's very charismatic. He's a guy that when he was in the Shield, I thought he was just kind of the spot guy that they would, you know, get him to do some crazy flips. But he's totally revealed himself to be an extremely well-rounded guy and potentially one of the best ever. And then, of course, I'd be, like you mentioned, there's a bigger world out there. But in the last year or so, I've paid a lot more attention to New Japan Pro Wrestling. And their current champ, Okada, he's pretty great. And there's this other dude on the roster named Ishii, and he's just this big, fat, bald, Japanese baby-looking guy, and he just smashes people's heads in. He's pretty awesome.
So why do you love wrestling? You're a grown man. I mean, we talked about how you got into it as a kid, and I think for most kids it totally makes sense, the appeal. But a lot of people scratch their heads as to why so many grown-ups not only watch it, but fill the arenas on these WWE and other company tours. You're one of them. You've been to live shows. You pretty much watch week to week and stay attuned to what's going on in terms of the storylines and the industry. So, I mean, why do you love it, and why do you think grown people love wrestling?
Like I said, I think it's comic books. I think once you get over the gloss of grown men pretending to fight in their underwear, I think what's left over is these dramas of power plays and power dynamics and perseverance and all of these things that make up great storytelling. And again, things that pop up in comic books and in action movies. I mean, really, a great wrestling match is like a really great action movie. In terms of peaks and valleys and setting things up and paying them off. I mean, the thing that makes a wrestling match good is the same thing that makes a Hitchcock movie good in terms of there's something that's set up and it's carried through logically and then it's paid off at the end of the narrative through line. So I feel like that's it. It's combat theater is my favorite way to phrase it. It's just a lot of fun, and it can also be terrible. And I think that, you know, probably 70% of it is absolutely terrible. But, you know, when it's good, it's really good.
Have you ever gotten laughed out of the room? I know you said you don't volunteer the information, but when you have, has anybody ever just given you that look of why?
Yes, basically every time I say it. Nobody's ever just laughed in my face because I hit them with that stone cold stunner. but no, it's definitely, you know, everybody kind of gives me a funny look.
Well, we got our first Hitchcock comparison. I doubt it'll be the last, and I'm sure we'll go even deeper than that as we continue this endeavor. But I'm glad you joined us for the first go-around here at Ben Stark. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Rammer Slammer is produced and edited by Ben Flanagan for the Alabama Media Group on AL.com. Find the show on iTunes. Thank you for listening.